Hello and welcome to the Pre-Alpha Podcast. With me this week is John Baldassera.
Hi.
Michael Thorne is not here. Something like that. Sure. Fair enough. How's it going, John?
Pretty good. I've actually played a lot of games. I don't think the last podcast we recorded went up, did it? Because I forgot to send it through because I'm useless.
So, and then I had stuff going on. I got a job.
Yeah, congratulations.
Everybody. That's good. Yeah. So I was like staring at a phone for 2 days.
Yeah.
Waiting for it to ring.
Yeah.
Because I missed one call and I was like, shit, I need this job.
No more headphones for the rest of the week.
Yeah, pretty much. So.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
Yeah, so we've been playing quite a lot, I think. And did we talk about the Game Awards and stuff or not?
We talked about it last podcast, so no.
So no. Well, shall you just very quickly be like, Bayonetta 3 got announced, and that's pretty much all that matters.
Yeah.
And there's a really great Kojima trailer, which we explained in detail, but I think maybe it's better to just watch it than listen to us try and remember a trailer we watched 2 weeks ago.
Just be aware that the invisible monsters are doing handstands.
Yep.
Because they're walking on their hands, there's handprints.
It's the only logical explanation. And you know, Kojima always deals in cold, hard logic, so...
I asked our inside source, and they could not confirm or deny, which I believe means that it's true that they are handstanding. Of course it is.
That's the company line I've heard. Okay. What have we actually been playing? I think we both played The Evil Within a lot.
Yes. I played both The Evil Withins for a total of 30 hours of The Evil Within.
That's a lot of Evil Within.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's okay.
It's a lot of not quite as good as Resident Evil 4, but still really good.
Yeah, I feel like you liked The Evil Within 2 more than I did.
Yeah. But maybe, surely, a factor of that has got to be playing both of them back to back. You know?
I don't know. I think maybe it's because, like... Like, the first game has so many weird eccentricities to it that aren't carried over, and I can understand why, because they're, like really dumb.
Yeah.
There's a mechanic where you can set corpses on fire, but it's not because the corpses come back to life.
Yeah.
It's because, well, you can set them on fire when you knock them down. They might not be dead, necessarily, so it's, like, saving ammo. But you can also set... one standing right next to them on fire as well by setting them on fire.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird system of kind of getting them to walk over the body and then throw a match down
on
them. And it never really works all that well. And it's kind of wonky, but I kind of liked it at the same time. And they just cut it out instead, you know?
Sure. Did they have like the electric bolts and stuff like that in the first game?
Yeah.
Okay.
The crossbow was in the first game, yeah.
Because that's the electric one especially is the same kind of thing where you can like chain things together and things like that in a slightly janky way. So, Yeah, like, I don't know. For me, it was the environmental stuff at first was like pretty hard to get my head around. Well, not really, because it's pretty simple. It's like kick over a barrel, shoot the petrol, and you can burn zombies. But I just kind of, like most survival horror games, like I spent the first few hours sucking at that game. Because you don't get a lot at the very start, I feel, until you start really exploring. So for the first hour or two, until I got like the shotgun and stuff, I was just constantly... I didn't really like it that much because I was having a tough time with it. And I was like, oh man, I just want it to be Resident Evil 4. A little bit more Resident Evil 4. I want like at least a fighting chance. But then when you find the first shotgun or the shotgun, I feel like from then on I had a great time playing it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and... Mm. I know the eccentricities from the first game that you've described are gone, but I think there is a lot of stuff that isn't in Resident Evil 4 that works well. Like just things like getting all of the zombies together, or getting them to chase you, then turn around and shooting the petrol, set them all alight, or setting traps and things like that. Like, there's bits where it very clearly wants you to set traps as well, because it kind of gives you a warning that stuff's on its way. It's like, oh, there's going to be some zombies coming, or whatever the creatures are called in this, I don't really know. And you've kind of got the opportunity to prepare for it. And I really like that stuff. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, you get that stuff to some extent in the first one as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think just... I don't know. It's just kind of like... I liked the weird jankiness to it because it matched the game. Because the game itself is kind of... I don't know, like the story or the characters. Something just feels like really B-movie corny to me.
Well, like much like Resident Evil, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I just feel like, obviously it looks a lot nicer than the old Resident Evil games do, but relative to the time they came out, it looks a little cheaper, definitely. Like when Resident Evil 4 came out, it was like the pinnacle of console graphics at the time. It was like absolutely unbelievable. Like watching the reloading animations and things like that was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And this doesn't really hold up to its contemporaries in the same way that Resident Evil 4 did. And that probably contributes to the kind of B-movie feel a bit more.
Yeah, I guess. I think so.
It looks good in places.
This game compared to the first game doesn't really hold up in terms of just like... There's a much more varied environment in the first game.
Sure.
There's a bit towards the end where it's like gone from the survival horror aspect to the action-y bit, as these games tend to do.
Oh, yeah.
You're in a city and the chunks of the city are shifting around and grinding against each other, and the alleyways you're going down are like shrinking and stuff. And it's like really cool just from like a technical standpoint and a like visual standpoint. It looks awesome. Whereas this game is mainly like you're either in this underground tunnel, which it all looks the same.
Or the town.
The Marrow or whatever it's called. Or you're in a town with a slightly... And the only thing that really changes about the town is that the skybox kind of gets changed a bit.
Sure.
And it looks cool.
Yeah.
And it's we did an open world instead of having like a really cool crazy environment.
Sure.
Which is kind of like what you expect from a game where you're going into the mind of like a crazy person, you know? You kind of want those crazy environments rather than an open world town, which just looks like a town, you know?
The town's pretty bland. But I did like that the very few unique locations in the town. Like I liked like the art design and the art assets or whatever, like inside like the hotel, for example, or the little bar that you can go into for a side quest. Like the very few locations it did have felt pretty nicely realized, I think.
Yeah.
Like the art direction, stuff like that. And the linear sections early on like actually did scare me quite a bit. And I've been scared by games before. But for whatever reason, this one really creeped me out. I know it didn't creep you out at all, but me and Jess were like, he's horrible. Like the first major villain you're introduced to. So there's just something about it that was really messed up. And cool as well. Like, I don't think it's really a spoiler because it's within the first half an hour. There's basically like this crazed artist who's like going around in, well, what's the psychic world called? I can't even remember.
Oh, I don't know.
I only finished it 2 days ago.
It's
whatever.
Town.
He's going around this crazy town that's inside.
It's something generic, you know? It's,
yeah.
It's easily forgettable.
Yeah. And, he's basically, like, murdering people in pretty sadistic ways. I mean, there's not really any other way to murder someone, but you get the picture. And kind of, like, preserving the moments of the death in this kind of time warpy thing. So, like, it constantly reanimates the death animation from when he killed them. And then he's, like, photographing it? Taking photographs. Yeah. I can't
photographing.
Today. It's been a long day at work. Well, it's been a normal day at work, which is long enough. Yeah, he's like taking pictures of them in these like really grotesque situations. And I don't know, there's something really unsettling about that character to me. And it does do some of the psychic like stage shift and stuff, which it sounds like the first game had more of. Like there's some cool tricks where like you'll look at a painting and then you'll kind of have to solve like a light puzzle or look in the mirror or something, and then the painting will turn into an actual corridor. There's like little nice tricks like that that I think kept the early linear sequences pretty interesting.
And yeah, it did that a lot more in the first game.
Right,
there was a lot of like transitioning and like, it kind of got tiresome, to be honest, in the first game.
Yeah.
But I think maybe they could have... I expected more from this one of maybe like new ways of doing it, but it's just more of the same mostly. The mirror thing was cool.
Maybe a lot of the budget went on the open world stuff. And the open world stuff,
I think so, yeah.
I actually disliked very much at the start, but once I realized doing the side objectives got you actual great rewards, like a shotgun, for example, I was like, this is actually really cool because it like takes the normal survival scavenging thing of something like an old Resident Evil or Silent Hill and applies it to what would normally be like really menial side quests, like, oh, you'll get a little bit of experience for this or something, or a sword that you'll throw away in 2 seconds, to be like, look, you need these shotgun bullets, don't you? So go and do this. Like, it's cool. And the actual side stuff that I think was optional had like fully realized characters in some cases.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Or like really good linear moments like in the main story. Like the bits with the ghost were really good.
And like by the end of it, I was like, was that optional or not? Mm-hmm. Like it was that kind of caliber of quality. So I was really impressed with that stuff. There wasn't a ton of side stuff, but I did a decent chunk of it, I think.
Yeah. I did like everything, I think. The only stuff I missed was the notes that you can pick up. There was like 40 of them, and I got like
38. Yeah. I missed one of the the projector slide things as well.
Oh, really?
Like the second one. I was like, no! But so that was a bit of a shame. But yeah, being a survival horror game, you want to explore, and I think the side quests were really a good incentive in that game, more so than most kind of semi-open world games. So yeah, I thought it was a really great game.
Yeah. Overall, I liked the flashbacks to the first game as well.
Sure,
they were really like that was a really cool little thing that they put in.
I mean, I never played the game. I mean, this is a very small spoiler, so skip a minute. But I never played the first game. But when I heard the chainsaw noise in the flashback section, like I played Resident Evil 4, so I knew the significance of that, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was cool, and I think it's worth just saying that I don't think anyone directs headshots better than Shinji Mikami.
He's good at popping those heads. I don't know how much input he has on the direction of the headshots.
Well, but think about it. Like, he didn't actually direct this game, he produced it, but he directed the first one, Resident Evil 4, and that Suda 51 game, Shadows of the Damned.
Yeah.
And all of those games have like the most immensely satisfying headshots in any game, in my opinion.
Splat.
So I think his under his tutelage, I'm sure, the designers kind of like put some emphasis on that.
He's a headshot auteur.
Or it's just a coincidence that every game he works on, like, just coincidentally has some really great animation when it comes to that stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I don't know.
Really good overall.
Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. It's I don't think it's as good as Resident Evil in most ways. I think, like, you know, the crafting mechanic for making ammo kind of took me out of it in a big way, and it is because they went more non-linear open world.
Sure.
That they had to add it in, because you could get to a point, otherwise you could get to a point where you don't have anything.
Yeah.
But I ended up just not worried about ammo from, like, I don't know, like 5 hours into the game. I was like, oh, okay, I'm set for the rest of the game.
There was like one boss fight that drained all my ammo, and I was like, oh man. But other than that, it was totally fine. And straight after that boss fight, I got plenty of ammo again within moments.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I mean, that's what they do for the most of it.
Yeah.
Like,
much more so than in Resident Evil.
Yeah. I think maybe on higher difficulties, that game would be way more challenging and satisfying, because like if you run out of ammo, you can make it on the spot, but it costs double the material. So there's definitely a system there that could be like really interesting and make you like just be like, shit, I need to make this ammo, but I really don't want to, because I need to save resources.
I didn't actually realize that it took double the material.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Well, I was doing that all the time, and it wasn't that much of a challenge still.
Wow, okay.
Yep.
That explains a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it explains a lot. Explains why I really struggled in the early moments of that game.
Yeah.
Oh, so, well. That's pretty funny.
I could see it being like a really satisfying system, but not on normal.
Yeah.
And, you know. But what are you going to do? You know, I wish it was more like upfront about that when you start playing the game. Like, of being like, if you really want to worry about resource management and stuff, maybe play it on a harder difficulty. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? I feel like the upgrade system isn't that good. It wasn't very good in the first game either.
It was okay.
The upgrades for weapons was fine. Upgrades for yourself was like, why do I even have this? Like, I don't really care. I've got enough health. I don't really need any of these that badly. I guess I'll just throw stuff in.
Sure.
And like the ones that are actually gameplay changing, you could probably maybe get one of them, because the resource cost is fucking huge for most of them.
Yeah, it really is. But
so I just felt like, what's the point?
I always felt pretty good when I had a lot of gel, and I was like, yeah, this is gonna give me the edge. But like you said, after the first few hours, I feel like I had the edge most of the time anyway. So
yeah,
Yeah,
and most of like the really valuable stuff that were in the first game, like increasing ammo limits, was gel. But in this one, you just find it lying around.
Sure. I don't know if any like recent games really got right. Like even towards the end, the last like disc of Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube, I suppose, like was a similar thing.
Yeah,
and it was just like you breeze through it, and Resident Evil 7 this year as well. Like, I saved so much ammo, and then when you get to, like, the ship section after the house, from then on, it was just easy, you know?
Yeah.
So,
it's weird. Yeah.
It's an inherent problem.
It's really tough.
I think they're just, like, so good at teaching you to salvage everything and keep everything at the start of the game when you actually need to. Mm-hmm. Like, you just kind of keep that behavior up, and it never really escalates. Like, the difficulty never really escalates in those games.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Well, wasn't a great amount of enemy variety for you to be like, how do I fight this? You're just like, okay, I shoot this in the head. I shoot this in the head. And this one in the head. It's like, you know, it doesn't really go anywhere that much or, like, challenge you with ammo conservation.
Sure.
It's kind of a shame in that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a solid game. It's still a lot of fun. Really cool visuals at times.
Definitely. I kind of just like the story as well, even though it is very B-movie. I enjoyed it, definitely.
Yeah, way, way better than the first game story. It just doesn't make any sense. You don't find out you don't have any comprehension of what's going on until, like, two-thirds into the game. And it's just like, oh, you're inside the mind of a psychopath. And it's like, oh.
Sure. Whereas the second one, even though I didn't really know anything about the first one, I kind of got the gist pretty quickly. So.
And apparently, like, the main character didn't know this, but he's just like, okay, and now I'm in a totally different place. I'll just embrace that without, like, mentioning it, even the first time it happens. And it happens constantly throughout the game. And he's like, it feels like he knows where he's going and knows what he has to achieve, but everything's fucking changing constantly, and it never addresses that. He's just like, funny. I guess I keep going down this hallway.
There's a moment towards the end of the second one where this like giant monster shows up, and he just goes, "Oh God!" it made me laugh so much because it's exactly what I was thinking in my head. It was just like too perfect.
Yeah, I think they changed the voice actor. Yeah. In the second one and everything, and it's definitely for the better.
Yeah,
man.
Cool. Did you play anything else?
I don't think so. No.
I played.
I need to get back on Prey. Oh, I haven't even started yet, but I need to start playing it.
Your Bethesda collection.
Yeah, like I bought a bunch of games in a sale, and I was like, okay, I've got to listen to your playthrough, and then I just stopped. And then yesterday, I was like, hang on. I need to buy Battle Chef Brigade to play.
Yeah.
But I need to play these games first, so now I'm getting back on the list.
The Switch has fucking games on it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you getting that for the Switch, Battle Chef Brigade?
Ooh, I don't know. I think I might play on PC.
Really?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I don't know how it runs. I'll have a look. I'll find out.
Like, Romance and Saga 2 came out as well, and like that's meant to be a really great like Super Famicom SNES RPG that I've always kind of wanted to check out. But like Xenoblade's out, so when am I going to get a chance? Probably like 200 hours time, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
200.
Probably. We'll see.
Good lord.
That game is I've got extremely mixed feelings about it.
Yeah.
Like sometimes when I'm playing it, I'm like, this could be in my top five of the year. Like, there's so much that I love about it. It's like, in many ways, entirely my kind of game. Like, it's a big. Big adventurous JRPG, you know, it's like bright and colorful, and the music's great, and the characters are nice, and all that good stuff. The combat's fun, the world looks cool, it's fun to explore and find new places and new monsters and new things and all that kind of stuff. But then there's so many annoying systems. Not even so much the systems, just kind of like the UI is really frustrating. There's a complete lack of tutorials, or like it'll kind of. There'll be pop-up messages explaining a new system, and then they'll disappear forever.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, it'll only kind of half explain. Some things haven't been explained at all, and I've just had to kind of, like, look on the internet. I've basically spent the first 10 hours of playing this game looking stuff up on the internet, like, every, like, 20 minutes, which is not a good experience at all. And it's not, like, in a Dark Souls way where it's, like, just figure it out yourself, because you just kind of can't. Right, I don't even know where to start. Right, so... The combat system's like much like the old games, in which it's a little bit a little bit MMO-y. Like, there's, like, cooldowns and things like that.
Yeah.
You can move your character around and battle and stuff. It's not, like, random battles, like an old JRPG or anything like that. So you've got, like, three party characters at all times. And each character can equip these things called blades, which are basically just weapons, but they have, like, a little character portrait and a character model, actually, that, like, runs around with you in-game. And some of the blades themselves are actually, like, characters that, like, speak and have, like, story arcs and personalities and stuff. And basically, these blades determine, like, your weapon stats and things like that. But they also determine your class, because you can equip several of these blades at once. Two at the minute, but there's another slot, so I assume it'll expand to three. And there's kind of, like, three main types, so, like, healer, attacker, and tank. Something along those lines. And
yeah,
you can,
the standard three.
Yeah, yeah. And you can equip combinations of those. And it hasn't explained this, I just kind of figured it out by messing around. So you could equip, like, an attack, like, two attacks and a tank, and it'll give you, like, a special class name and special bonuses associated with that, whether that be stat-based or kind of, like, boosts to certain types of attacks and that kind of thing. Which is cool. That's all well and good. But
yeah, sounds interesting.
It's actually great. Like, I really, really like that aspect of it. On top of that, like, each blade, so each weapon, kind of has, like, requirements. It's got, like, this big sphere grid looking thing called an affinity chart. And basically there's all of these requirements on it. And some of them are really, really clear. It's like you'll arrive in a new area and it'll be like, right, kill 10 of this enemy type and then you'll get a 70% boost to attack when you fight flying monsters or something like that. So it's like, okay, I can track these down, no problem. Or a lot of the time, because you're just exploring and doing side quests anyway, you'll just do it as you go. But then some of the requirements are just, like, totally obtuse. Like, they're either vague or, like, don't offer any explanation at all. So the option is you just go online and search for it, which just sucks because it's like, it just doesn't make sense why it just doesn't give you a little bit more information. Because some of them are perfectly clear and fun to follow. There's just things like, you know, speak to 40 NPCs of this race. And it's like, okay, that seems fun. Like, I like talking to people in towns and JRPGs. I may as well get a reward for it. And then some of it will be like, get 20 flowers from the collectibles. And it's like, well, I've got like 50 flowers from the collectibles already, but it hasn't unlocked yet. And like, I still don't even know what that means. You know what I mean? It just seems like super inconsistent and unclear, which is really frustrating. But having said that, most of that stuff's really, really good. It kind of unlocks boosts for the moves for your blades, but it also unlocks these things called field skills, which are kind of cool. So occasionally you'll come to like a locked treasure box and it'll be like, oh, you need, I can't remember the exact skills you need, but it'll be like, you need someone's focus to be level 2. And it kind of like scans all of your blades that you've got, the game does automatically. And it'll be like, okay, this person's level 1 and that's the only person you've got. So you failed this skill check and you can't open the chest. But if you have another blade on someone else who also is level 1, it'll kind of combine those levels and be like, oh, you made it to 2, so you've opened the chest. And it just kind of like, it gives you like these little mini goals to work on to kind of like level your blade so you can explore more. And it's just nice. It's a nice system overall, I think. Yeah. But the worst part of this is that the way you unlock new blades is like totally random. You get these little crystals from fighting normally like significant enemies, or like you get some in the story, or you can find them in chests and stuff. And there's kind of like different tiers of these crystals. There's common core crystals and rare core crystals, and I think there's like ultra rare and stuff, but I haven't got those yet. And basically you use one of these crystals with a specific character, like one of the main playable characters, and that randomly creates a blade. And it'll be bonded to that character forever. So if you're building out one of your characters to be a healer and you get an attack blade, even if it's like a really cool rare one, which has popped up quite a bit, like it's not useless per se, but like if that's what you wanted to develop, like you're out of luck, you know?
Yeah.
So you could be, granted, like I've popped a few rare blades so far on the wrong characters, so it's been really annoying. But I haven't really gone grinding for crystals yet, so I don't know the extent of this problem. But I can imagine grinding for rare crystals and then getting no rare blades or one really good rare blade on a character that doesn't need it and just being immensely frustrated. Like, it's been frustrating so far, but I'm not ready to say yet how bad it is or how good it is. It might be totally fine. I've only played for like 10 or 15 hours. I could come back next week and be like, oh, I've got loads of rare blades. It's fine. It's not a big deal. But the system is incredibly off-putting so far.
So can you switch up roles rather than wanting a certain blade on a certain character? Could you not just be like, okay, you're my attack character now?
No, because you can, but like the characters have base stats and like the characters themselves have an upgrade path.
Right,
and
okay.
Like the upgrades for one character are like very skewed to be like, oh, they use magic for healing, or their defense is going to get a lot higher than the other characters.
That is weird. That is a weird system.
It's the if you could swap the blades around, even the random nature of it's fine, because part of me does like the random nature because I've got the gambling instinct like everyone else, right? Like, I would rather there was like specific quests to get specific blades, like just because that's the kind of game that I like. I don't really like random loot stuff very much at all, but I can live with it. It's just the fact that you can't switch the blades around. Well, you can. We'll get to that in a second, but just that fact is really frustrating, and it kind of puts me off collecting all the blades, which would be a fun thing to do in some ways, I think, because they all have like unique character models and like different artists did them. I think there's like a character from Xenosaga, which I never played, unfortunately, who's one of the rare blades. It's like really cool, and they all have different special attacks and special attack animations, and like it's a nice system in some ways, and especially the ways that they affect your character development, I think, is actually genuinely great. But the way of obtaining them is just so fucked up in so many ways. But yeah, there is an item, like I alluded to before, there's an item called, I think it's called an overdrive crystal or something, which allows you to switch whoever the blade that you've drawn is bonded to. So if you get a cool healer one, you can transfer it to your healer one. But according to the internet, which is always right, as we know, there's only a couple of those in the game. So
from the looks of it,
you've got to like really grind for them later on, and that sounds like a not great time. But I used one so far, and I used it effectively. I was like, this seems like a good healer. I googled on the internet, which is the last thing I want to do when I'm playing a game, and I was like, yes, give this to Nia because she is a good healer and this is a good healer. So that's done, but it didn't feel good to have to look that up. I don't know.
You could have just got more crystals, and then maybe you would have got it on her again.
Yeah.
Or something. Can you get repeats?
I'm not sure. That's a really good question. Yeah. I haven't got a repeat yet. But there's like lots of like really standard common blades, which apparently you can finish the game just with the common blades like pretty comfortably. But I like having the cool looking characters and the unique attacks and stuff. So,
is there a ranking system? Can you get like a 5-star blade? So it's like, so is that just based on the rarity, or is it like this one could be rare and 2-star or 5-star, depending on if you get it the right one? Is that how it works?
I think like all the rare blades have unique portraits, and that I think they're all 4 or 5 stars, as far as I know.
Right. So,
and the star does indicate the rarity, but it also indicates the affinity rating. So you know how like there's that affinity chart where you can level up all these skills. Each tier of that chart unlocks based on how much you've used the blade, because your affinity with that blade grows. So if the affinity rating's 5-star, it'll grow much faster and everything will unlock a lot faster. So that's like another reason why rare blades are like not necessary, but like the better option, because you can level up everything way faster.
Okay, so the star rating only affects how fast they level up?
I think so, yeah. And they'll have different stats and stuff, but I'm pretty sure like, if you get like the character from Xenoblade or whatever is a rare, Xenosaga is a rare blade, I think her stats are all kind of like set, you know? I think she'll always be a 5-star one rather than like, oh, it's a 3-star version of her. I think it is just, oh, she's 5 stars.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure. Like, that's the thing. It doesn't explain any of this. And
yeah.
That said, like, although I have spent a lot of time looking stuff up, a lot of the time, I could have just played the main content of the game and had a great time anyway. Because there's a lot of stuff to like about it. Like, the combat system's got a really nice flow to it. And just the music and the world look really nice. Like, there's certain locations, and you go into people's houses and stuff, and it's only happened once or twice, but the amount of like detail and personality in the interiors is kind of like reminiscent of like an old PS1 pre-rendered background style game. It's like, oh, this isn't that, like, this is doing something for me that a lot of other games just don't, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, so I don't know, if you like JRPGs, anyone who's listening, and you have a Switch, like, the fact that it's on the Switch is a massive bonus as well, because you can just like sit, do like a little quest, put it away. It's pretty good for that. But if you like JRPGs, I think it's worth putting up with a lot of the frustrating stuff.
I do like the look of this game quite a lot, and that's unusual for me, because I generally, you know,
I mean, I'll be bringing it over at Christmas, so you could just borrow the play. I don't think you can. Yeah, I mean, you could mess around on my save a bit. I was gonna say, although the save will be on the Switch,
give it a go at yours.
Yeah. So you could play the first couple of hours, no problem.
Only one save slot, right?
Seems pretty crazy. Because every time you pull a rare blade, it saves before you pull it, so after you've pulled it. So you can't cheat the system, which is Also the animation for like the blade creation or whatever takes so long. I mean, it probably doesn't, but it feels like it takes so long.
Are they updating it to reduce that? I know they're updating the map. They're fixing the map because apparently the map's garbage, I've heard.
What was that you cut out before you said garbage?
The map. I've heard the map is garbage.
Yes. Holy shit. So there's like a fast travel system. So basically, whenever you click the button, I think it's like, I'm terrible with Nintendo buttons, the equivalent of triangle on a PlayStation. When you click
X,
maybe when you click that, it automatically jumps to the fast travel page, and rather than bringing up the area of the map that you're in, it just brings up like the top level menu for fast travel with all the different regions. So you've got to kind of like scroll through. If you want to see your full view of the map, you've got to kind of like search for the region you're in and click on that, and then click on the sub region. Yeah, that would be
they've specifically called that out as the thing to fix. One of the things they're fixing.
Baffling. I think the last two games were pretty bad in that respect. The last one was really obtuse, Xenoblade Chronicles X, and the first one probably was as well. But I was probably a bit more forgiven because it's like, ah, it's a Wii game from 2009 or whatever. But this is just really, it's the blade thing and the map thing that are the most frustrating aspects of it. Mm-hmm.
How do you farm blades, crystals, whatever? How do you get them?
Like I think I mentioned before, but like there's some unique monsters on the map, and you can fight them again as well. Like a little gravestone appears once you've killed them, and you can just click it, and they'll respawn or whatever. Bosses seem to give them like a lot. Like I got like 25 of the common crystals, and managed to get like 5 rares out of that. And then I've got 2 rare crystals so far, and managed to get 1 rare out of those. Just like bosses, unique monsters, and I think, at least for common crystals, I think I've found a few in some random chests and stuff like that. So you seem to get them at a pretty high rate. Honestly, like the worst part of the system is that they're bonded to one character forever unless you use that super rare item. Like that is really the gripe that I have with it, because it's like, oh, I got this like really cool tank, which I did last night, but it's bonded to my attacker, and I've got nothing, no item that I can alleviate that problem with. So yeah, that's the issue, man.
Since this blade system is like really, like it doesn't feel like it makes sense in like a standard game. It makes it like if you're playing like a mobile game, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
of like attaching to specific characters and that. So it's kind of like a kick in the dick. And adds another unnecessary layer of frustration and
so you just pay the money to get over it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if this was a mobile game, like a horrible twisted part of me,
free to play.
Just let me pay a pound so I can put this fucking tank on this person. You know.
Yeah.
Like I can totally see that it's like born out of that out of that psychology. You know.
And like since it saves after you use a crystal to get a blade, do you think maybe this game was meant to have microtransactions originally, and then Nintendo were like, nah?
Well, if it was, like, it would have been Nintendo originally who wanted to put that in, you know?
You think so?
It's a Nintendo game.
Is it?
Yeah, Monolith owned fully by Nintendo. And
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Okay, so do you think maybe the Planda end were like, maybe not. Maybe this is kind of messed up.
It's hard to say, because, like, that...
They left all the systems in place. Because, like, the star system and everything, that's just, like, one of the, like, Fire Emblem, was it? The mobile one?
Yeah.
Had that stuff in.
Sure.
Also a Nintendo game.
I mean, that stuff's popular worldwide, but I think, like, gacha stuff is insanely popular in Japan. Like, even down to the actual gacha machines, you know, and pachinko and everything like that, like, semi-legal gambling kind of stuff. It's, like, it's massive over there. It's, like, ingrained in the culture in a way that I don't think it is here. As much, at least. So, I don't know if it's just been inspired by the trend of games, or just kind of like, no, people just like that feeling here. Like, oh, I got this rare crystal, I hope it's something good. Whereas for me, I'd rather be like, I killed that monster that took me like an hour to fight, and then I got a cool sword from it. You know? I got this predetermined specific thing.
The randomness should be that you stumbled upon something in the world that you did not know was there, and it rather was
cool,
than...
And then I did something cool, whether it be fought a boss or like did a little puzzle or talked to someone, and then I got something cool for it. Like that's a predetermined cool thing. Like
How about playing a mini game with terrible controls upgrade a specific blade?
Yeah, like I like that character, and I like that blade, like the funny, and I like using them in combat. But there's like a like faux arcade game that you have to play to upgrade this blade. And this blade is the only blade that this character can use for story reasons. Yeah. And it's just terrible. Like, it doesn't make sense. You can upgrade like the base stats of the blade and the affinity and get loads of abilities and stuff. Uh-huh. But there's these things called aux cores, which like basically supplement your weapons with like extra stats. And this character doesn't have any of those, and the only option is to play this mini game. So right now, it hasn't really affected the progression of the game that much, like they're a viable character, but I know at a certain point they're going to be useless, you know.
Yeah,
unless I engage with this terrible fucking mini game. it just seems like it's full of so many ideas and systems, and some of them work so well, and some of them are like, why have you done this? It's like really baffling.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that up. They've added an easy mode to it, right?
That's sure, what I yeah. read so, anyway. This is all happening tomorrow as well, so I'll definitely report back. But I don't know. There's so much to like about this game as well. That's the thing. Like, I do really enjoy playing it, and I'm excited to play more tonight, but, like, I can't ignore the issues, you know? They're definitely there. And people's mileage will vary, you know? People can put up with that stuff, and some people can't, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. It seems good. It seems bad in a lot of ways, too. Handheld mode, I hear, is really shitty looking. What do you think about it?
It looks pretty grimy.
Much in handheld?
Looks pretty grimy. Yeah, mostly, honestly. Okay. When you're in kind of like confined spaces or like the preset dungeons and stuff, it's really nice. Like, it runs nicely, it looks nice, all that kind of stuff. When you're in like the more open areas, like the draw distance is pretty bad and it looks really grimy. It still runs well, though. Like, if you get into a fight and you've got the camera to an appropriate zoom level where you're overseeing the fight, like, it looks great still, you know? It looks, like, not great, but it looks pretty good. Honestly, like, on my TV, it looks grimy anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't...
It's a big TV.
So did the last one. Yeah, Zelda looked really great on my TV. Even Mario looks a bit grimy in places on my TV.
Yeah.
Some of the textures and stuff are kind of like underwhelming. Like, Zelda looked amazing, so it's not like an issue with the Switch or anything like that.
Zelda's a lot of green grass texture.
Sure.
You know, like it's quite simple relatively compared to Mario has some stuff going on in New Dunk City,
and looked fucking fantastic on my TV as well.
Yeah, that's a very simple game
I think it's more of a texture issue with Mario. Some of them just look a little especially in that the Steam Forest place or whatever.
Kingdom, that just doesn't look right. That doesn't look good.
Yeah, I think you said it looked kind of Dreamcast-y, and it definitely did on my TV.
Yeah,
I mean, that's an exaggeration, but yeah. But yeah, this game
doesn't
really impress me. Like, the art style impresses me, and the scale of it impresses me, but I don't know. It does look a little grimy. Like, both ways.
It held back a little bit.
Yeah, but I don't know. The really good with the art direction, and like even the Wii game looked really good playing it on like a modern TV and stuff. Just because of like the world design and stuff. So I think it looks nice overall, but it's not like a technical showpiece by any stretch of the imagination in either mode. But it runs solidly no matter how you want to play it, and I think that's the main thing.
How's the story?
It's okay. I really like it, but it's anime trash so far, you know.
Yeah. And that's I've heard, pretty much what I took away from what I've seen of a just anime fluff.
I've heard the second half is really good. And Xenogears, the first Xenogears, is like my kind of anime fluff. It's like anime, not anime fluff. It's like Evangelion.
Yeah.
It's nonsense in some places, but it's intriguing, interesting nonsense. And I hope it veers more in that direction. It sounds like it does from reviews and things like that. I don't really know much about the story. But people are like, whoa, the second half's like really impressive. And the first half's like, it's okay. It's like better than your average Tales game, the first half.
Okay.
But not much. So take that as you will. But I don't know. It's nice. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. The writing's pretty solid. It's very British. And I'm playing it with Japanese voices, so that's a little weird. And hearing the clashes between the names. All the names are different. Mm. So that's like, it's not a big deal, but it's weird
that they didn't change the names for people playing it in Japanese.
Yeah, like the text.
To match the audio. I mean, you'll never hear like the what's she called, Pyra or whatever.
Yeah,
you'll never hear that said in Japanese. It's
like Homura and some of the characters as well, like the little
Tora.
He's called Tora in both, I think.
Yeah.
But his blade is called Poppy in English, and it's called Hana in Japanese, which makes sense. But like,
flower,
yeah.
Because you're just like, oh, she's just called Hana. She's just her name's just Hana. That's like a name.
That would be totally fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, and Homura is not like a hard thing to pronounce either. It's like three syllables.
Yeah, but you don't get the meaning from it.
This famous lady. There's a character in Madoka called Homura that everyone loves, you know? Like, people know Homura.
Yeah, I don't know Homura.
It's a common enough anime name, I think. But it doesn't matter, anyway.
Okay.
I can't recommend this wholesale, but if you like JRPGs and you're willing to put over some stuff, I think it's pretty good. I think it's really good,
like anime. If you like giant dragons that you can run around on.
Yeah, it's cool. It's all good stuff. But there's some extremely frustrating systems. But
is the combat good? Is like the combat like fun to play?
I think it's fun. There's a really fun flow to it.
Okay.
Yeah, it is MMO-y and cooldown-y, but you have to like chain attacks.
It's an ATB system
between your party members and.
It's basically an ATB system.
Kind of like what very little I played of Final Fantasy 14. Like, that's the only MMO I dabbled in, and it's a little bit like that. But you're controlling one character, but you can switch between the others, and you can switch up a lot of your moves and command the other characters to join in with chain attacks and things like that. It's got a really nice, it's got like a very satisfying flow to it, I think. But who knows if that'll hold up over the dozens of hours that'll probably want me to play it. So
I cool. don't know.
Yeah.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah. Shall we go on the news?
Yeah. Let's see. Where does the news begin? Dragon Quest Builders is coming to the Switch.
Mint?
Next year.
Class.
The original one.
Yeah, because they announced the second one.
That's also coming to the Switch, so catching Brilliant. This up. Yeah, I'll probably skip it. I feel like I played the demo on the Vita, and I was like, I get this, but it's not quite there. Maybe the second one, I'll figure it out. It seems pretty cool, though. Bungie has admitted it's made a mistake again in locking bits of the standard Destiny 2 experience behind the new DLC. What was it called? Okay. Curse of Osiris. So basically how it works is they made it so that when the new expansion comes out, the content, like the raiding content of the base game, is brought up to the same level.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's also locked out for people who don't have the DLC.
Oh, yeah. Got ya.
So they basically made it so that you can't play.
So base the game, content of the game's locked out.
You lose content. DLC. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Just crazy. So I guess they need to fix that.
Yeah.
On top of the whole shader stuff and the loot boxes, it's kind of, that game isn't maybe much better from the first one at launch. And the first one at launch is kind of rough and not fun to play. After, you know, it's such a shame. I felt like Destiny had so much potential.
Sure. I mean, the core of that game is like super fun from what I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot dudes.
It's just everything around it seems not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Nintendo Switch has sold 10 million units. Or Good shipped job, 10 million. Sold more than 10 million units in 9 months.
It's had,
fucking insane.
Well deserved, in my opinion. Like, for all the issues of Xenoblade, that's a very good game.
Mm-hmm.
From what little I played of ARMS, that's good game. Splatoon's good, but it's not really for me. And then fucking Mario and Zelda are both great. So, what a fantastic first 9 months or whatever.
Maybe a year, incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kirby might make it out within the first year, and then it'll be truly the greatest first year of a console.
Greatest first year of a console, yes.
I mean, it probably already is, but yeah.
Yeah, maybe. The only reason it's only sold 10 million is because they haven't been able to crank them out fast enough as well.
Yeah, man.
It's insane. Yeah. Should have bought stock in Nintendo when I said.
And, we don't really, Pokemon and Animal Crossing are going to be the things to push it over as well.
Yeah,
in insane tier. So
when they get announced, revealed, proper, Jesus,
it's exciting.
It's all over. We talked about Xenoblade Chronicles update already. Bandai Namco have announced Pac-Man Championship Edition 2 Plus.
Yeah.
And what else did they announce for the Switch? My Hero Academia, of course. Yeah. They showed some gameplay of that. Looks like that Naruto game.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, we'll see. That Pac-Man game, I wish so much it was the first one, because the first one's so much better.
Yeah?
Yeah, but I don't know. I bought the second one, but I didn't give it a huge amount of time. But with this being on the Switch, I don't know, man. I'll probably buy it. That first one's just perfect. Championship Edition DX.
It's a very good game.
It's wonderful, but we'll see.
Okay. PlayerUnknown has apologized for an inappropriate female character model that they added in the test server for PUBG.
I haven't seen this. How inappropriate is it?
The ladies have camel toe.
Okay.
A little bit of the camel toe going on.
Yikes!
If you take your pants off, your trousers off. Oh. And apparently, it was some external. Model and done that wasn't meant to be in the game but got put over. I don't know about that, but I guess that's what they've said. So
okay, we'll
take that as
gospel,
as fact.
And player unknown himself,
whoever he is, no one knows. It's unknown.
It's true.
But people complained about it. Little bit of camel toe.
Yep.
There's a Lord of the Rings card game coming out for the PC. It's based on the physical version, I believe, which is made by Fantasy Flight Games. I don't know much about it. What I found interesting, though, is that there's no randomization in the card, in getting cards.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's not going to be like a loot box bullshit Hearthstone game.
Nice.
Where you have to pay over $1,000 to catch up if you've bought the game now.
Is there a Lord of the Rings TV series or something as well coming?
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
As far as I know, it's not going to be just the story of the Lord of the Rings retold. It's going to be more like stuff that happened in between. Like before the Lord of the Rings. Before the Hobbit.
Okay.
But like after the war. I don't even know what that war was called. Something.
Okay.
The previous age war.
Okay.
Which led to the current one. So that's interesting, just from the fact that it's not going to have loot boxes in it. It's kind
They've
of
got
a...
They've got you. That's the level now. That's all it takes these days.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fuck. Like, card games are the original loot box, though, right? Like, you buy a booster pack and you get random cards.
Sure.
And maybe there'll be a rare one in it. So it's interesting that they're doing that. I guess they've got a physical card game already to play that, to get all the money off that. So it's just like, hey, here's something you can... If you don't own the cards, you don't have like this physical thing, so maybe we're not going to fuck you in the ass, you know?
Lovely. well put. Eloquently put. Cool.
Thank you. And my last story is that Catherine is being re-released for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita.
Vita, man.
Yeah, it's still going. You know what Atlus are like. They like to support the old consoles.
Yeah.
They like the handhelds.
Yeah. Imagine.
Persona 4 sold pretty well on Vita. Oh, yeah, you know?
Like, I don't know. A weird part of me is like, maybe I'll get the Vita version. Because I'm going to buy this just because I love Atlus so much. And because I love Catherine. I played it again last year, I think, or the year before. So I played it twice, so I don't feel the burning desire to play it ever again, really. But I do like that game a lot. And they're adding a lot to it, by the sounds of things.
What are they adding?
A new character. A third Catherine, who's called Rin. She doesn't really sound like Catherine, but okay.
Rin?
Yeah, that's what she's called.
It's like my D&D character name.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And she's got pink hair, and she plays the piano.
Yeah.
And apparently she's not like a dateable option like the other two Catherines in Catherine. But you can kind of bond with her in the bar at night. And I think she opens up more options or scenarios with the two main Catherines. Depending on how you respond to her, it affects your relationships with the others or something like that.
Okay. It's pretty unclear. It'll make some new endings, probably, yes. I imagine.
So, yeah, there is new endings. There's new scenarios. There's just like more stuff story-wise. And then they've added some mechanics to the puzzles as well and an online... Yes, and an online multiplayer mode and more difficulty levels. Hopefully, easy.
Very easy. Yeah.
Very easy was annoying enough. So I'm guessing there'll be Persona 5 songs in the jukebox and stuff like that. Which should make sense.
A bigger soundtrack would be good. I really like the soundtrack of Catherine.
It's good.
It's like, it's quite, you know, sparse.
Sure.
Because there's not many areas or things to go on.
Yeah.
So I'd like some more of that because it is a good soundtrack.
Yeah, it's cool. That game like looks nicer than Persona 5.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Yeah. I'll rephrase that.
It does. I agree.
It's only one location, really. So of course it does. But I don't know if it needs a remaster in like the visual department. You know, it looks really great. But I don't know, man, if it's 4K on PS4, I think that'll be the system to get it on. But they haven't actually said anything about that yet. But I don't know. The additional features sound cool. If you haven't played it before, I would definitely recommend it. It's really cool. And
I think they could touch up the nightmare areas quite a bit. They could mess with that a bit.
Yeah, they could.
Make it a bit nicer.
That's true.
Quite bare bones, let's say.
Yeah, sure. What's also like potentially interesting is that it's Studio Zero working on this game, which is the new team that is set up to do the crazy new fantasy game. And they've said that they're still recruiting people for that fantasy game. So it's a ways off. But this game kind of seems like hey, we've got people here. Let's train them up.
Let's have a project.
Let's break them in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice, I think.
Break them in.
But, like, it's kind of like how Catherine itself was like, we should probably do something in HD now. We just released Persona 4 on the PS2 in 2008, 2 years after the new consoles came out at the time. So it's like, we'll do something in HD. Let's do something weird to make sure we can do it right. So let's do Catherine. And now it feels like they're doing that again. You know what I mean? Like, let's do Catherine again to make sure the new people are doing okay. Like, it's pretty funny, I think, in that respect. But yeah, I'm guessing 2020 or 2021 for that, like, brand new Hashino game.
Do you think Hashino has, like, a similar thing to Miyamoto, where it's, like, 2 a.m, he's like, it's waifu time, and then they just start designing waifus.
Yeah, like, make a new Catherine girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost definitely.
Make someone I want to fall in love with again.
Yeah.
Do it.
Again. For the 50th time. Yeah.
Yeah. Not sure. Kawaii enough. Give me another.
Yeah, at first I was like, this Catherine seems too kawaii for me from the picture.
Yeah, I'm not I don't think she matches the tone of the game even.
Yeah.
Like, pink hair. She's like a high school girl, as far as I can tell. It just seems really like... I think she's going to be another Marie, you know?
Whereas Catherine with the K was like in her 30s, which is really cool for like a Japanese game to have any character in the 30s, you know? Like the cool thing about Catherine was that it was like all the characters in general.
It wasn't another fucking high school story thing, like, in Japan.
Yeah. And look, I'd fucking die for Persona right now. Like Persona can stay in high school, I don't care. It's perfect. Whatever.
Yeah.
But not everything has to be. And everything from that seems to be these days. It kind of sucks. So Catherine was like really refreshed, and I was like, oh, it's all like adults talking about grown-up shit. And it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. This character doesn't do anything for me so far.
Now that the Japanese people are getting weekends and reasonable hours slowly but surely, maybe they'll actually have a good time in the adulthood, and they can make games about that.
Yeah, sure. Hopefully.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm getting that game regardless. So
yeah, I'll play it again.
Even if I don't play it, I'll be like, I've got really Catherine again.
I look forward to seeing a Morgana plushie somewhere in the bar, next to the teddy one, maybe.
The screenshot they put out has the teddy plushie in the background. That's the first thing I looked at. I was like, I wonder. But yeah, Morgana will be in that game in some form for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Where's the Persona 4? PS4 remaster.
That's all Persona 3 or... Yeah. Like, that's the... Other than the obvious lack of Switch support and PC... Like, PC is not really surprising because that is weird. Like, the real weird question is like, come on, man. Persona 4 would fucking blow this out of the water sales-wise. But maybe he just wants a break from Persona.
Oh, yeah. He's done with Persona.
Yeah, and I feel like... He wants to explore new themes, and even though he's already done Catherine, maybe adding this new character to Catherine and new scenarios will allow them to kind of go in the direction he wants to for the next game. More so than being like, let's add some stuff to Persona 4 again.
Hmm.
Yeah, so.
We'll see. I mean, they're making a fantasy game next, so I don't know how useful this will be. We'll see. Maybe
it's going to have a... You can make a fantasy game about like adults with like relatable problems though, rather than like...
Yeah, that's true.
Rather than another like, oh, it's just Dragon Quest or it's just like Final Fantasy 4 again. You know, like they can do something different with it, hopefully. But I don't know.
I mean, I don't know how relatable it can be in like a medieval fantasy setting.
Yeah, of course it can. You know, like people all over the world destroyed my village. Time. You know, yeah, but like in terms of human relationships... Like, Nia's, like, super relatable by the end, even though it's about fucking androids fighting aliens, like, 300,000 years in the future or whatever. You know? Like, there's universal themes that can be explored in any setting.
Okay.
That's my Christmas message.
Yeah. For Christmas. We've got another podcast before Christmas.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Like a couple days.
Yeah.
Well, it all works out great.
I'm looking forward to this Game of the Year podcast we'll do in a few weeks too.
Yeah, I've got a lot of games to play before that.
Fucking hammer Xenoblade. I think Gravity Rush is just dead to me. I'm gonna play it afterwards, but it's not making the list because
you've been delaying that for like 9 months
because just more stuff kept coming out, you know.
Too many RPGs.
I've played so many games this year and like half of them are like over like 50 hours long. You played a
Tales game over it for some reason.
I don't know why.
Yeah, that seems crazy. That seems crazy to me.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
That's a good game too, though, I suppose. Pretty good. I don't recommend it.
Top 10?
No.
Top 10? No? No?
The Tales one? Nah.
Do you think Gravity Rush could be top 10?
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But I thought Wolfenstein was going to be top 10 after I played it, but after Evil Within... I think that might have edged it out. And then I think Xenoblade might edge that out. I don't know.
Okay.
We'll be back in 2 weeks to discuss that stuff. Cool.
At least. Might be a bit longer, actually.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right. Thank you very much for listening to the Pre-Alpha podcast. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
It's a joy as always. We'll see you. We'll see you next... Soon. Very soon. Probably too soon.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Bye.